It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, Green Bay's Democratic Mayor Eric Enrich is here. Says he was elected to a second term on bread and butter issues. We dig into those pressing issues as we regularly touch base with mayors in all corners of the state. Call in with questions for a mayor, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Eric Enrich was elected in 2019, won re-election this month. Mayor Enrich, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, let's start by hearing about a couple of your top priorities in your second term. What do you have ahead of you?
Yeah, I mean, they're really the issues that we talked a fair amount about during our campaign. So it was really focused on public safety, infrastructure, and community and economic development. And on the public safety front, we're really proud of the fact that we've made major investments. That hasn't necessarily been the case because of the way that local government is funded across the state of Wisconsin in other communities, but we have been able to make those investments in police and fire. So we've added 7 additional police officer positions to our police department. We've added more firefighters and invested in new technologies to assist the work that they do. So we're going to continue to make those sort of traditional investments in people power that we know is necessary to keep our neighborhood safe. In addition to that, though, we just prior to the election, we were given some really good news by the Medical College of Wisconsin. They received a good amount of funding from Governor Evers and his administration in the form of some ARPA resources to dole out grants focused on violence prevention mm-hmm. in communities throughout the state. And we were awarded $1 million to implement a program like that. So we're in the process of accepting that grant. Our common council actually just accepted the grant in our first council meeting after the election. And so now we're going to begin the hiring process of identifying a director to run that program, not actually out of our police department, but in our community economic development department, working closely with our police department and community organizations to develop some mentoring programs to break that cycle of violence.
Oh, that's really interesting. Exists. Yes, that's interesting that it would be housed, this Office of Violence Prevention, to be housed in the economic development side and not in the police area. What will that enable you to do?
Yeah, so and that was a requirement actually of the program that that these offices of violence prevention not be located within police departments. But we have a strong history within the city of Green Bay of interacting closely with our residents and with our neighborhoods. We have a neighborhoods division within our community and economic development department. We've had community service interns for a long time that were once housed within community economic development. So we've got a really good, I think, track record and history of running not identical programming, but similar programming. So we're looking forward to standing up this office and addressing violence in a more holistic way, recognizing that our police officers bear a really heavy burden as it is, and this is really going to require an all organization effort, all community effort to address some
to address
issues.
It. Yes. Another grant coming your way will affect the coal piles. This long sought cleanup project to move the coal piles from, from the shoreline, the Fox River shoreline. What is the status of this?
Yeah, so this is something that mayors going back literally 70 years have said they were going to do. The stars have aligned a little bit here, and so we're really hoping that we're going to be able to relocate that coal pile operation that currently resides on 35 acres of our downtown riverfront. The old Pulliam power plant, which is a coal-fired power plant, was decommissioned a few years back. And so that is where we're hoping to relocate this operation. We've been partnered up with the county who operates our port here in the city of Green Bay, been partnered up since my election, working really closely with them to pull down some federal resources to make this possible. So Governor Evers, again, and his administration were very helpful in this effort, allocating $15 million to create this new port terminal on that Pulliam Power site. We also received an additional $10 million from the federal government thanks to Senator Baldwin and her support for the bipartisan infrastructure law, tremendous resources are now available to ports across the country. And because of that, also some harbor assistance money, we're getting really close to making that a reality. So so the county and the port are currently kind of in negotiations, in conversation with Sea Rice, which is the entity that operates that terminal. And once that is complete, we'll be able to start some serious negotiations with Sea Rice about their existing spot, in the hope of redeveloping that for downtown, you know, commercial and residential sorts of uses, rather than what is now a really sort of blighted area. So excited about the possibilities there.
We're checking in with mayors around the state. We have Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich, recently reelected to a second term. Calling with questions for Mayor, what you wish to explore, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have conversations with mayors across our state examining Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich's next 4 years, his reelection campaign focusing on the idea of a Green Bay for all. Join in the discussion. Bring your questions, 800-642-1234. Conversation right here at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to the Packers. Green Bay's tourism economy, of course, benefits from the Packers, especially during those home games. What is your reaction this week to the Packers completing the trade of Aaron Rodgers to the Jets?
It's definitely the end of an era. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, you know, Hall of Fame quarterback and Super Bowl winner for the Green Bay Packers, and done so much for the team and the community. So bittersweet in some regards, but looking forward to the next chapter as well. You know, it'll be exciting to see how Jordan Love steps into that role, and obviously got the draft coming up here tomorrow. So some additional draft picks, and we'll see how that all comes together.
Speaking of the draft, KC, Kansas City hosting it. In March, the Green Bay City Council voted unanimously to pursue hosting a future draft. When could Green Bay host the NFL draft?
Yeah, so it could be as soon as 2025. We're also in the running for 2027 if 25 doesn't come together for us. But we feel really optimistic about either one of those dates. And as you mentioned, the Packers have tremendous positive economic impact on the community whenever we have a home game. So it's in the neighborhood of $15 million in economic impact. Typically, the draft would be even larger than that. It attracts hundreds of thousands of people to Kansas City here in the next couple of days, Detroit next year, and then we're hoping it'll be, like I said, Green Bay in 25, if not then in 27. But a great opportunity for us to show off the community to people that are you know, that will be coming to this this event.
Does Green Bay have the infrastructure, the hotel infrastructure, and everything else that goes with it to host an event of that magnitude?
We do. Yeah. I mean, obviously, a smaller city in comparison to most NFL communities around the country, or all actually, we are the smallest. But we feel really confident that we're going to be able to accommodate all the requirements that the NFL has for these events. The Packers and our Convention and Visitors Bureau, Discover Green Bay, they've been tracking these events for several years. And so we feel really good about our chances to land the NFL draft here.
How about the lease of the stadium? Lambeau, publicly owned and tax exempt, and it's under that decades-old lease agreement. What are the city's goals in negotiating a new lease?
Yeah, so, you know, can't really get into the details of that necessarily, but we're looking forward to the conversation with the Packers. We've had some preliminary discussions already at this point, and, you know, the organization obviously has a hugely beneficial impact on the city and the region, but just want to make sure that both sides are happy with the agreement moving forward. You know, want to make sure that the citizens of our community, the taxpayers here, are being, you know, appropriately rewarded for all the support that we've offered to the community team going back many, many years.
We're going to land here quickly on housing, because $5 million you just received as well, a grant for new housing and a multi-purpose community development site. Your challenger in the election linked you with rising property taxes and rising home prices. What are your plans for affordable housing?
Yeah, I mean, affordable housing is a huge need for people of all income levels, really, not just in the city of Green Bay, but all across the state and country. So we're really excited about this opportunity to create essentially a brand new neighborhood over on our southeast side of town near the Salvation Army Croc Center. So we received that $5 million from the state of Wisconsin, from Governor Evers' administration, to really stand up this new neighborhood with three main pillars, which would be that housing element, of course, but in addition, a destination playground and an urban agriculture element to it as well. So it's adjacent to one of our most disadvantaged neighborhoods within the city of Green Bay. So we see this as an opportunity to really, like I said, build out a brand new neighborhood, but also create some additional connectivity to this distressed neighborhood and the larger community.
Mayor Genrich, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. That was a great conversation.
Eric Genrich, mayor of Green Bay, first elected in 2019, won re-election this month. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the work of a nonprofit resource center coaching people with neurodegenerative conditions on using brain-healthy techniques to improve quality of life. Join in with your questions about brain health, 800-642-1234. Conversation right here at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Rolf Luloff is co-founder of the Brain Center of Green Bay and a retired orthopedic surgeon. Dr. Luloff, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be talking with you.
Your center offers free coaching for people to reduce symptoms of neurodegenerative conditions. And you say it is essential to stimulate the brain. And one way to do that is through human touch, like hugging. Why are these techniques effective?
Hugging and actually movement by itself. But hugging, number one, it's joyful to most people. Number two is when you are physically moving, that movement, your muscles put out chemicals that help the brain. One specifically, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. It comes from the muscles, it goes into the bloodstream, it goes to the brain, and it helps form new brain cells, and it helps to solidify the connections between brain cells. And that's how our brains work. By those things.
Techniques to stimulate the brain, like you mentioned, moving and exercise and focus. Sometimes it's called neuroplasticity techniques. How are these techniques different from other ways to enhance brain health?
There are so many techniques that are good. Healthy nutrition, avoiding stress, getting good sleep, all of these things contribute to your brain health. Doing things that are positive stimulation for your brain, playing the piano if you can, or doing things like that. And actually socialization, getting out with somebody. I'm always impressed when I go out for a run that I see people, and it's usually ladies, women, walking, and they're talking nonstop. They're socializing. Frequently, they're talking with their hands as much as with their voices. But it's a joy to see that, because this is stimulation for our brains. We have to take charge of our brains. If we let our brains just run by themselves, sometimes you have good habits, but oftentimes you have bad habits. We can take charge of our brains, but it's an awareness of who we are, what our needs are, and taking action.
So by walking and talking, and I can just see two people at a clip and their arms going, that's really doing two really beneficial things for the brain at once.
Absolutely. You know, if you eat well and you've got the fuel on board, and then you go out and you socialize, you breathe fresh air, you see a beautiful sunset or sunrise, you say, wow, this makes me feel good. We have an opportunity to feel good from so many things, but we have to take charge of that. And lifestyle makes a huge difference in that regard.
The brain is super complex, as you're aware. What are scientists learning about the brain's ability to adapt to injury?
Well, our brains will adapt to many, many things. They adapt to our aging. If we don't take charge of them, granted, we are going to get older, but there's no reason to quit. And so you find the activities that turn you on. Not everybody's going to be a runner, but get out and walk, socialize, keep moving. If you're homebound, keep moving in the house, practice sitting and standing with a good chair, and up and down and up and down. Every time you sit down, stand up three times, but have a chair that makes it safe, because falling is never allowed. So you have to be in control. You have to have the information of what to do, and then you have to do it.
We're talking with Dr. Rolf Luloff, co-founder of the Brain Center of Green Bay, retired orthopedic surgeon, as we examine brain health and what techniques are good for our brains. Dr. Luloff, a study that was published recently in the Lancet Journal of Neurology says a test of spinal fluid may predict who's likely to develop Parkinson's disease years before the onset of symptoms. How could earlier detection affect treatment plans?
We have an epidemic of neurological diseases, be it Alzheimer's, be it Parkinson's, being aging and not maintaining the sharp mental sharpness that we have. There's good evidence that we can make some difference. The problem is, if you don't know what's going on, are you alert to do something about it? My wonderful wife, Anne, lost her sense of smell at age 36. Mm. Little did we know that was her first sign of Parkinson's disease. It took 13 years until she developed the shakiness and the classic signs. If we could make a difference for these diseases early on, it would be helpful. We know we can make a difference if we have a healthy lifestyle. Is that a guarantee we'll never have a Parkinson's or Alzheimer's? No, it's no guarantee. But statistics show if you have lived a really healthy life, keep your weight under control, be physically active, and socially active, do the right things, and don't drink alcohol, or if you're going to drink alcohol, make sure you limit it, because it's a toxin to our brain. Stress is a toxin to our brain. If we are nervous all the time, find ways to take control of your life with healthy activities.
What are some activities that you are able to do at the center for the people who come in seeking resources?
Ordinarily, our first visit with people that are seeking resources will last a half or an hour to an hour and a half. It's getting to know them and understand their needs, because we're all different, but they're also understanding us. So you build trust with those people. Because do I have all the answers for everybody? No, but we have good ideas and scientific evidence that a lot of these things will indeed help. One of the latest things right now is our intestinal tract, our guts, and the bacteria that are in there. There's trillions of bacteria in our intestinal tract. There are good bacteria and there are bad bacteria. And what we eat has a lot to do with which bacteria are going to work well. It's not just taking bacterial supplements. It's choosing the right foods to eat for our individual needs. So we have to know ourselves, but then we have to take charge. We have to get the information. So we'll sit down and talk to people and explain all this.
In terms of diet, you have said to add coconut oil or fat to diets, advising people with Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. What impact does fat have on the brain, on brain health?
Our brains and our bodies need fuel. Our brains weigh about 3 pounds. That small amount of it's amazing. Our brains can do everything they do, but they're very complex. But they are energy eating. They use a lot of energy. They use 20% of the energy in our body is involved 24 hours a day in making our brains work. So we have to get good fuel. The safest, the best fuels are simple glucose, but not too much, and healthy fats. If you have healthy fats and you have healthy carbohydrates, but that's the key. It's got to be healthy. And we're all different. Some people are very sensitive to certain types of food. So you have to understand that. Some people, the grains, some people, the grains can be very hard on the intestinal tract. So you have to get the fuel into your brain. And if you don't get good fuel into your brain literally is starving. And we see that. Studies show that people with Alzheimer's disease, their brains often are starving. And so you've got to find a way to get the healthy fuel. That's where the healthy oils, the coconut oil and things like that, have been shown to be helpful for certain people. And that's the key for certain people. And to know, you don't want to put too much coconut oil into your body, especially over a short period of time, because it may go right through your gastrointestinal tract and you may need a bathroom.
That's another issue, right? We only have a few seconds left, but I just want to return now to caregiving. Your wife, Anne, who had Parkinson's disease, you took care of her. What encouragement and positive interactions can you talk about between caretakers and a person with a neurodegenerative disorder?
We all need care partners. Hmm. Hopefully, our situation with Ann, we were in love all of our life, and we learned to hug. We learned to laugh. We learned to turn challenges into a positive experience with all of the tools that we can have. So we kept moving as much as we could. And with her Parkinson's disease, she got to the point she was really struggling. She fell 3 times in a year with major injuries. Mm. And we found by safely exercising, we went 9 years without a single fall. That's profound. And we found safe ways to do it.
Dr. Lula, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity. We welcome being of help.
Retired orthopedic surgeon Rolf Luloff, co-founder of the Brain Center of Green Bay. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.